It's now time for The Sit Down with Don Tony.
The Sit Down, where Don Tony talks one-on-one with his followers.
What are you looking at?
About the world of pro wrestling, pop culture, and so much more.
The Sit Down with Don Tony.
And now, your host, Don Tony.
Well, we haven't done one of these in what, like 3 or 4 weeks? Shit, man. April 16th, 2023. Welcome, everyone. This Sit Down with yours truly is live, and I want to welcome you to the show. It's great to be back. You know, a week ago at this time, a little vacation definitely needed, especially going into WrestleMania. But, you know, we are right back into it with the wrestling news and discussion. And I want to welcome everyone. I hope everybody is doing well. Tomorrow night we have Monday Night Raw, which seems to have not kicked off the new season as well as people anticipated it. But we have the draft coming up in a little less than 2 weeks, which is going to shake things up. Remember, there's the roster split has been relaxed somewhat, but at the end of the day, you know, don't believe the noise that they're going to ultimately, you know, just keep one champion on one product, whether it's tag team or men's champions. And even you hear little rumblings to unify the women's titles, you know, the TV deal that they negotiate with the USA Network. The TV deal that they negotiate with, well, NBC Universal, the TV deal that they negotiate with Fox going forward, you know, these networks want their own champions, or they want at least a champion to be featured. Now, Roman Reigns and the Usos have picked up a boatload of that slack, especially over the last 12 months. But going forward, obviously, things are going to change a little bit. Makes you wonder how long Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn will be Universal Tag Team Champions. I mean, they will keep those titles for a while. The only question will be is if it's going to be one or two. But anyway, enough of me rambling. This show that we do, usually on Sunday nights, the format is simple. I show up with nothing. The only thing I have is my fellow wide mug filled with coffee, and I have you. And you tell me what you want to talk about tonight. All I ask is that, you know, in the chat room, if you could ask a question, just type in capital letters the word question so I could spot it quicker. If you have a comment that you want me to share with everyone, just write comment before your comment. Super chats are never required, but they are appreciated, and they definitely help with these shows. You know, I love wrestling, and I've been doing this for 27 years now. But, yeah, it's got to pay for some of the bills. Otherwise, yours truly is out of here. And they'll always get VIP treatment. And everybody who is a channel member here, a Patreon, much love to all of you. Thank you for keeping the movement alive. And I think now adding a little bit of a Don Tony and Kevin Castle show element back into the mix, you know, it's energetic. It's fun. And after doing this for so many years and to still have fun like this, you know, that's what makes it so great. I mean, people out there, you know, they've decided to go all in, no pun intended, that this is their livelihood. This is their source of revenue. Take away podcast, they have nothing. So they got to put it all on the line. And that's cool and everything. And I'm not knocking that, but man, when you are not happy with what you're doing, boy, that feels more like a job than anything else. And yes, this is a second job, but I still enjoy wrestling. I try to, you know, single out the things that I like more than I dislike. And the things that I do dislike, I try to come up with opinions, solutions, ideas, suggestions. You know, it's never going to be perfect. I mean, you could go back 20 years, 2003. You know, this was right, you know, after TNA started, about a year after TNA started. We're about 2 years removed from WCW and ECW going out of business. And now we start getting the holdovers from WCW, you know, the Hall, Nash, Hogan, Goldberg. And then you had some up-and-comers starting to develop, Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, John Cena, Randy Orton. You know, and then you take the fact that we're coming out of the Attitude Era, but it's not PG as of yet. You got Dirty Vince with Torrey Wilson and Trish Stratus and Stacy Keibler and some of the other antics. You got Divas Search. So, you know, there's always been faults and substantial faults. I mean, it's never going to be perfect. But you got to enjoy what you're doing, man. And you got to focus on the things that you like, you know. We're not like, you know, we're critics. We're all critics at the end of the day. But you got to enjoy what you're doing. You know, and there's a lot of people that do, and they really work hard. So, all right, before we start filling up the show with questions from the chat room, we got a super shout out. We got two of them that came in, and I appreciate it as always. This one is from Ronnie C. Welcome back, DT. Just want to give you props being right about no WWE hiring freeze and that WWE content could get edgier. Not sure if you heard, but Nick Khan said they are discussing it with NBC Universal. Listen, I'm not that smart, but I am. I pay attention. I'm observant, and you know the idea that people were claiming hiring freeze. I think they did that to try to justify why WWE was not as interested in Jay White as you think that they were. You know, individual wrestlers within WWE would have loved to have Jay White aboard. Absolutely. He's friends with a lot of people there. He's a great, talented wrestler. And a lot of individual wrestlers in WWE absolutely wanted him there. The problem is WWE management didn't feel Jay White was a priority. When you see the revenue, when you see the numbers, when you see the size of the roster that they have right now, is Jay White really going to bring in any additional viewers? Seriously. People were joking about Cody Rhodes a little over a year ago. When Cody Rhodes came back after WrestleMania, by 2-3 weeks later, people were cracking jokes. Oh, look, the ratings are worse even with Cody here now. So, you know, it's different reasons. But again, you know, if it could benefit WWE, it's going to happen. Somebody being signed. Logan Paul was the perfect example. Once Logan Paul re-signed, then people started to think, wait, I thought there was a hiring freeze. I thought no new contracts until the deal's finalized. No, as long as Endeavor is cool with it and it's more of a verbal, you know, agreement with contracts, it's going to happen. And as far as getting edgier, I mean, I saw that a mile away. You know, Endeavor, I think I said it yesterday, Endeavor is not Nickelodeon. Endeavor is going to be the majority. You know, it's a new corporation, and Endeavor is going to be the majority owner of World Wrestling Entertainment. And it's backed by Ari, whatever his last name is. You got UFC and Dana White, not children's shows. So why wouldn't they get a little edgier? Why? Because it's the right thing, you know, to do to keep PG for families and stuff like that. No, this is not even your cousins or your uncles, you know, WWE anymore. Once that deal goes through, I said it several times on these shows, wouldn't be surprised if some of the programming becomes TV 14. Now, I do know what you're talking about with Nick Khan. Nick Khan said that right now WWE is talking to NBC Universal about getting a little bit edgier, TV 14 for hour number three. And remember the original rumors that WWE was going TV 14? That was about a year ago. Now you can honestly start, you know, thinking about it. And let me tell you something else. When it comes to, understand this, when it comes to becoming TV 14, what do you think immediately? Do you think strong language? No, my first thinking is more violence. Maybe even a little bit of blood. I know in 2023, you know, you try to be, you know, really, really careful, you know, with hygiene and, you know, other things. But, you know, it's cinema. It's cinema. So blood could return, a little more strong language, a little bit more violence in hour three. You know, you don't want hour three to feel like an extra show. You know, you don't want to do that. And listen, hour three is usually WWE's worst hour when it comes to the Raw ratings. So if it gets a little edgier, you might get those older fans to want to stick around for the third hour. You might get some younger fans that might tune in more for the latter programming. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not, you know, this big journalist here, I opine, but I saw those two things a mile away. And I know I'm not the only one as well, but thank you, Ronnie, for that. I appreciate the 10 spot. Big Sal with a 5 spot. I'm really glad to hear you and Kevin doing shows again. When is the next DTKC show? I haven't talked to him yet about it. I'm thinking next Tuesday that he and I will maybe do a little preview about the draft. Not only predictions, but who we think could benefit going from Raw to SmackDown and vice versa. So that's not etched in stone. I haven't talked to him yet about it. But I think maybe next Tuesday we'll do something. So, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll definitely see what happens. Bad Shade, as far as bra and panties matches returning, it's not socially acceptable. It's not. Just because it's owned by a more adult-oriented, you know, entertainment conglomerate. Excuse me. That coffee was strong and hot. Doesn't mean that you're going to do immoral things. Listen, you ask me, I don't mind a bra and panties match. I don't mind that at all. Maybe you dress a little bit more revealing, but at the end of the day, they're not going to do anything that's going to cause like major controversy online. So, but no, that it's whether you were joking or not, that's a legitimate point to make. You know, TV-14, sexual overtones, why not? That's not out of the question. It's just certain things, you know, you got to be very careful about. And listen, they're very, very careful. I mean, you look at UFC, you look at Endeavor. I mean, they do some things that are way over the top. But, you know, at the end of the day, they know certain things, certain lines not to cross. So William M. is asking me, when does Randy Orton finally return? I think he's returning soon. I don't know exactly when. I wish I could say to you by SummerSlam or Saudi Arabia. They are, if you notice, and it's not just because Riddle is back, because Riddle coming back, even when we talked about it 2 months ago, the idea of his return and who he was going to feud with was always the same, that he would be thrown into the mix with the Usos and Solo Sikoa, and it would be unfinished business there. They could have done that and not mentioned Randy Orton's name much at all. Seriously. RK-Bro, yes, one of the more fun tag teams, and I've said it many times, I'd like to see them align again, especially if Matt Riddle is going to get stuck in the mud as a single star. But, you know, it's interesting how many times they have name-dropped Randy Orton since Riddle returned over about 2 weeks ago. So I think Randy Orton is returning sooner than we think. I personally think even if he's ready, you got to wait a little while. You got to move on from the Usos and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Right now, Owens, Zayn, Riddle, Rhodes, all four of them are intertwined with the bloodline. Rhodes, there's a little detour because it's a little bit too early for the title change coming out of WrestleMania. So Cody Rhodes has his hands tied with Brock. But when it comes to Riddle, Owens, and Zayn, they're still intertwined with the bloodline. So if you're going to start introducing Randy Orton again, and it's not going to be feuding with the Usos, then it's got to be for something else. And if Randy Orton does return and reform with Riddle and go after the Usos, well, then you have to start pulling away from Owens and Zayn. You know, sure, we could end up in the summertime having Orton and Riddle versus Owens and Zayn. We could see that match go down as well. But right now, too many cooks spoil the soup. And, you know, I don't think you really want to incorporate Randy Orton back into this mix. Sure, I could see somebody saying right away, hey, give us Randy Orton versus Roman Reigns for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship. I could see that. You know, Roman Reigns is going to have to defend this title, you know, between now and when he loses it to Cody Rhodes, he's going to have to face somebody. So that's a possibility as well. So, all right, Liddell. Shout out to Liddell. Do I think it's time for Shawn Michaels to reconcile the GG and JC breakup? Do a Dr. Shelby segment? I don't like the doctor. This is way beyond Dr. Shelby. This is not just two friends that are just not getting along right now. This was vicious. This is brutal. This is anger. And this is not something you simply just do almost like comedy skits. You know, can we, you know, reconcile? We're way beyond that point. I personally would like to see them back together. There are ways you can do it. It's NXT. The thinking doesn't have to be as complicated as the main roster. I want to see Mandy Rose back. Sorry about that. Video people know why I said that. I want to see Mandy Rose back. Mandy Sachs. Come on. All right. Let me tell you something. All right, here. I'll make a prediction right now, especially with Endeavor doing this deal with WWE. It brings the idea of Mandy Rose returning even closer. Because now you look at what Mandy Rose did and, you know, her outside account. If Endeavor's like, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Think about that. Endeavor, the new corporation, may allow some of these talents to maybe show a little bit, not go nude, but why not? Why not? It's not owned by WWE anymore. It's not World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated. I think with this merger and acquisition, remember M&A? Nobody focused on M&A all those months. They just kept saying sale. It's an M&A. It's a merger. It's an A&M, if you think about it. It's an acquisition and a merger. That's what it is. I think Mandy Rose returning is a stronger possibility now because of the deal that's being done. I think maybe if Mandy Rose returns, maybe she can be the one to spark the reconciliation of Toxic Attraction. Dr. Shelby is way beyond that point. But Tristan wants my thoughts on his Mount Rushmore. Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, The Rock, and Macho Man. Excellent. Excellent. You know, I've kind of said this before, and I'll say it again. When anybody offers you a Mount Rushmore, whether it's a friend, whether it's a legend, a Hall of Famer, whether it's somebody outside of wrestling, inside of wrestling, understand they're giving you their four favorites, the four that they put at the top. Look at The Undertaker. He chose Andre the Giant as one of his Mount Rushmores. I loved Andre the Giant growing up as a young wrestling fan. My grandmother adored him. I got to meet him once. Guy, you know, just, I wish that, you know, I could have met him more times. People just gravitated to Andre, even though Andre, unfortunately, was a freak of nature. But Andre the Giant, by the time the late 80s came around and The Undertaker is breaking into the business, you know, he's not what he was in the mid-70s. Andre the Giant, by the time you got around like 1983, 84, was more of, you know, he was always spectacle, but he was not one that would have revolutionized the, you know what I mean? No matter how big he was. But for The Undertaker, he was a massive influence, and I respect that wholeheartedly. So whoever you all feel is in your Mount Rushmore, it's just fan opinion. Whether you are in the wrestling business or outside the wrestling business, it's fan opinion. And my four would probably be different than everybody else's four. Me, I don't like doing Mount Rushmores. I've always said it. If I ever really get into Mount Rushmores, I'll do my Mount Rushmores from the legendary era or the attitude era, or, you know, I'll do the 80s and 90s, you know, because I can't narrow it down to four people. And for me, I would have to put Terry Funk in there somewhere. I'd have to put Terry Funk in there somewhere. Terry Funk would probably be in a handful of wrestler Mount Rushmores, but not the everyday fan. So, Guardian of Chaos, I've seen the Dusty Rhodes biography twice already. I absolutely loved it. Tremendous. when you watch it, I watched it the first time, got the overview, watched it again, started really thinking about certain things. Obviously, that was done strategically right after WrestleMania, and this prepares you for what's going on right now, the chase, the struggle, hard times. This is what Cody Rhodes is doing Dusty. He's doing the 2023 version of Dusty. The difference is, and this is something I have said before, that Dusty and Ric Flair fought dozens of times, if not hundreds of times. In this day and age, Roman is not wrestling more than maybe once every other week. So there's not too many matches that they can actually have with each other. This is the 2023 contemporary version of Dusty. And yeah, this absolutely, there's no doubt in my mind whatsoever, Cody Rhodes is going to become champion. And when everything is said and done, there's going to be, you're going to see similarities with Dusty. And now for the younger fans, and listen, Dusty Rhodes stopped wrestling pretty much in the early 2000s. You want to go mid-2000s because of the storyline in WWE, fine. But you're talking 15 to 20 years ago. You know, that means wrestling fans who were 10 at the time are now 30. That means people who are not alive now are now 16 to 18 years old. A lot of wrestling fans, the majority, have probably never witnessed Dusty Rhodes live in living color in real time. I had the luxury of watching wrestling since 79 as a kid. So I've lived through Dusty. I've said it many times, and I have to be very careful how I word it. Dusty Rhodes is not one of the greatest NWA heavyweight champions of all time. And when I say that sometimes, when I first started saying, I used to get ripped alive because I never got into the real context behind it. Dusty Rhodes, go add up the number of days he's held the title. It's this much. Dusty was money chasing the title, not being the champion. In the case of Cody Rhodes, he needs to be champion. In 2023, because of this need for acknowledgement, need for, you know, reward, you know, you look at even the AEW stuff, there's got to be surprise, crackerjack surprises, reward, positive outcomes, amazing, unbelievable, heart emojis, this is incredible, this is the greatest thing ever. Nobody wants to say that about anything in defeat. So in 2023, Cody Rhodes must be champion. That's where it stops with Dusty. Cody Rhodes has to be champion, and Cody Rhodes has to have an extended run, and that's going to happen. But you see it side by side. They're educating everyone of who Dusty is, why he was important, why so many people adore him. I mean, back when Andre died, I think it was in 1993, when Andre died, you always heard about all these people adoring Andre the Giant. But he died not too long after he stopped wrestling. For Dusty, his full-time career was done for 20 years. You know, I mean, really, I mean, his career was done. So you had many more years go by where you just heard why people loved him so much, and you really never witnessed it or understood it in real time. So they're educating the current crop of wrestling fans. You may have heard it. You may have heard NXT stars praise the crap out of Dusty. Now you're getting to see why. I loved it. Thought it was great, man. Mark Hicks II, how can WWE make the draft feel special again? I know you're not going to like this answer, man. I'll say it two different ways. Number one, it'll never be as special as it was 20 years ago because you had GMs on both brands. Without figureheads on both brands, it's never going to feel extremely special. If they would have had somebody, I always thought Sonya Deville should have been the GM of one brand and Adam Pearce the GM of the other. I would have been fine with that, but as long as you don't have GMs on either brand, it's not going to feel as special. Because you don't feel competition. That's the thing. You don't feel opportunity. You know, you're on, whether you're on Raw or you're on SmackDown, it doesn't feel like there is this, listen, it's not blue versus red or red versus blue. The second thing is I'm looking forward to the draft. I saw the noise online. I saw the usual suspects shitting on it, ripping Triple H. This is garbage. Is that? I ignore those people. I acknowledge them and I hear them, but I don't listen to them. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing some matches. I'm looking forward to see how they handle Judgment Day. If Damian Priest and Finn Balor and Dominic Mysterio get drafted to SmackDown. You know, there's a lot of things about the draft I'm looking forward to. How NXT is going to play a role with this. You know, next Tuesday, if I do a special episode with Kevin, we'll get into all of that. But I'm not going to turn around and say I'm not looking forward to it. This is all entertainment. It's all storyline. It's not real. And I don't mean it in that way, but guys, gals, whether somebody wins or loses, the physicality is real, but the outcome is predetermined. Guys, gals, whether somebody's on Raw or somebody's on SmackDown, we're watching an entertainment company. You know, so people are taking it in a way that it's real. You understand what I'm saying? That it's not predetermined. Everything that we watch, whether it's a draft or a match or an outcome or an angle or a heel turn or a babyface turn or an alliance or a split, it's all a story. The story never ends in WWE. The funny thing about it, and I brought it up before, and I know people got angry at it. Kev and I pointed that out a week before WrestleMania when Sami Zayn said it. The story never ends. Everybody was cool with when Sami said it. When we said it, everybody was like, yeah, I guess you're right. When Triple H said it in the press conference, people said it was bizarre. So these are people that are just, they have to complain about something. Understand, too, I don't want to disrespect anybody who is younger, you know, 20 years younger than me. But in this generation, we are dealing with a lot of coddled and, you know, people who have falling on pillow feathers. We are dealing with people that need to have a pacifier in their mouth a lot later in age compared to infants. We're dealing with people, especially since the early 2000s, that everything has to be epic, amazing, unbelievable, the best thing ever. They have to capitalize everything. OMFG, this is effing amazing. They have to capitalize this. They got to throw it in your face. If you disagree with them, they ignore you, they bash you, they criticize you. What are you, fucking stupid? You know, this is the age that we live in. So you have to, at some point, you have to just look at it in your eyes, in your vision, in your glasses. And if it doesn't agree with those people, I know it sucks to be alone. You're never alone. You're just not as loud or as vocal. When you hear that noise on social media, understand you're talking about this big of annoyance. Look, even the ones that somebody said to me today, DT, you know, what do you think about, you know, that maybe FTR's low rating on Dynamite is that the fans are just sick and tired of the CM Punk FTR stuff. Everyday wrestling fans are not paying attention to this. It's not a big deal. They're just watching TV. It's this very, very tiny group. And yes, I'm part of that group because I talk about it on these shows. It's a very, very tiny percentage that have taken notice now of the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho and the Elite and Meltzer and Tony Khan with no backbone. You see it now? It's unbelievable how many people are saying it now. Why? Because now they've turned against CM Punk again. Now with him returning, he's got to be kept in the conversation. You know, 6 months ago, it's like, fuck CM Punk. He's not part of the team. Let's move on. Let's stop talking about this guy. He's not part of the future. We got to talk about not everybody, but those same noises, same voices. They've deleted a lot of their tweets over the last 6 months. You got to ignore those people, man. You got to ignore those people. Gruss has no lies detected. You know, I've said it many times before. We could take a certain different direction in things. Have triple the people tuning in. Because there's a lot more people that want to, you know, do the opposite than have straight talk. At some point, it turns around. Sooner or later, it turns around. And that's fine. People will get sick of it. Listen, complaining and ripping and criticizing, you get some point where you get a little bit tired of it. And you just want to sit back, relax, and chill and have fun. That's why, understand, and I don't want to disrespect anybody out there. Why do you think when good things happen, they have to blow it up like they just blew a load? I mean, seriously, you see Vicenio versus Kenny Omega, which was an awesome match. I praised the shit out of it. I mean, did you see what people are like, this is the greatest match I've seen in my life. Oh, my effing God. Look, I'm literally shaking right now. That's because their emotions are so out of whack that when something good does happen, or extremely good happens, or something a little bit above average happens, everything is epic, amazing, unbelievable, the greatest thing ever. Oh, my effing God. They have to capitalize every other letter, lots of emoji. This, and great with all the... Because they can't just act like a normal person. They can't just react like an everyday. They have to stand out. Those are the people that you can associate yourselves with, but don't let them dictate how you feel about shit. Will Rally Sport Rally. Thoughts on Joey Janela getting second-degree burns at DDT Pro's indie show last night. It's the second time he's burnt himself. This is the first I'm hearing about it. My first thought is, I hope he's okay. My second thought is, there's an old saying, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. All right? I know that's not exactly what that means with Joey Janela. My point is this. All right. You had an experience once before with second-degree burns. Now you put yourself in a position where you got second-degree burns again. You should not expect people to give you sympathy like before. Maybe you went it. Listen, I'll give you a great example. This is a great fucking example because I talked to him about it when he was alive. God rest his soul. Supreme, XPW. I got to, you know, get to know him a little bit when I was doing work for XPW 20 years ago. And one night we were in the hotel room and everybody was chilling in my room. My room was the room where everybody, not everybody, but some would smoke weed and do chopping contest and, you know, seeing the chaos of XPW and Jerry Lynn chopping each other until it literally bleeding to see which one gives it. When you're sitting on your bed and they're doing it right next to you in your bed, and then I have a camcorder and somebody's passing around, they're cutting promos, and it was hilarious. It was amazing. It was a lot of fun. But I also talked to him about one night in particular. And they did a flaming table spot when they were in California. And what happened was they used charcoal fluid. Charcoal fluid. There's a reason why you use Zippo fluid. But I don't want to just label it as charcoal fluid, but they used the wrong fluid. That's probably a better way to put it. And he got rushed to the hospital. He got rushed to the hospital, and he was in, I don't want to say critical condition, but extremely serious condition. The guy could have died from it. And when they did TV the following week, they had two ways to go about it. Either just avoid the issue on TV, ignore it. You know, oh, we hope, you know, we pray that, you know, Supreme gets better soon and returns to XPW. No. A lot of people didn't understand that Chaos and Supreme, you know, I think they're cousin and uncle. And the following week, they're cutting promos on TV, acting like they're having a barbecue. You know, and people were very, very, very angry. They thought, no, this is too real, man. This is too over the top. Supreme realized that it was a big mistake. Point is, they never made the mistake again. Chaos. Garden Chaos. Chaos, K-A-O-S. Kid Chaos, K-A-O-S. Used to be with Smiley and, oh my God, I always forget her name, the adult industry. Somebody will remember. Oh my God. I just mentioned her too, and I was talking to Matt Riddle's girlfriend on that podcast too. But they never made the mistake again. That's the point. You know, Joey Janela put himself in a situation again where he got second degree burns. So you feel bad for him and you hope he recovers, But he put himself in that position again. So, you know, hey, if you play, you must pay. If you play, you must pay. So, you know, I hope he's okay. But, you know, he had the opportunity. And look, he must like the spot that much that he is willing to accept the risk. He's willing to accept the risk. What did I think of the Bloodline Goodfellas movie parody? I loved it. I thought it was funny, man. Especially out of the entire skit, I laughed in particular at two things. When Roman, and I'm telling you, I think Roman Reigns improvised because it didn't even sound like it made, like it didn't flow when he said, what am I, a tribal clown? Like, I thought that was pretty funny. But my favorite point of the entire segment was when Roman Reigns looked at Paul Heyman and said, wait a minute, you know, I make you laugh? You think I'm funny? When Paul Heyman went, what? Oh, my God, I lost it. Because if you ever watched the original scene in Goodfellas with Ray Liotta and Joe Pesci, you know, like, you know, Ray Liotta wasn't like, what? But when Paul Heyman, I couldn't stop laughing because that's something Paul Heyman would do. It fucking laughed my ass off. I did they did a great, great time. They did a great job with it. And they did a great job, you know, setting up the restaurant. You know, the lighting, the tables. Obviously, they, you know, they had to use generic bottles. You're not going to advertise real alcohol on TV. So, German's asking me my favorite scary movie. I have not been a fan of scary movies since my teenage days. As I got older, I stopped liking scary movies. I mean, I've watched the Scream movies and thought they were great. I've watched some of the comedic ones. Growing up, my favorite horror film that I watched repeatedly was Halloween 2. I always enjoyed it. I was in the movie theater when it happened, you know, when it first ran. And Halloween 2, man, you get into it, especially when you're getting in the hospital and shit like that. There was, listen, I know we're going back to the 80s, but when they did the scenes like in the hospital, I mean, just imagine being in a movie theater and people losing their shit. They're jumping out of their seats like rooting for Jamie Lee Curtis. There were a lot of us that wanted to see Michael Myers killer, you know? But I always loved Halloween 2. As I got older, I loved Freddy Krueger, thought they were great. Friday the 13th movies, oh my God. As those movies went on, you went to a movie theater, if you did not root for Jason, it's almost like going to an AEW show wearing a WWE shirt. I mean, if you did not root for Jason, everybody was going to make you feel this big. They were going to pretty much try to force you to leave the movie theater. When I was a kid, and I've joked about this before, you know, my grandmother took me to horror films. And, you know, I've said this lightheartedly. My grandmother loved horror films. In hindsight, I'm almost a little, she's the one that got me into wrestling, by the way. I realized that my grandmother was into very violent forms of entertainment because on a Saturday afternoon, she would always watch here in New York on Channel 5 these ninja movies from the 70s where somebody gets slashed and the blood shoots for like three blocks, makes John Moxley and Hangman Page look like child's play. She would watch those. She'd watch wrestling. She'd go to horror films. She took me to see Zombie, Dawn of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead, Maniac. And I was like 12, you know, like 11, 13, like those years. And as I got older, I was like, always said to myself, like, why did Nanny take me to like these gory horror films at 11 years old? You know, but that's probably, I probably enjoyed them because I was with my grandmother, so. As far as, like, the legendary killers, Michael Myers has probably always been a man for me. Although Freddy Krueger is fucking awesome, too. I was always a fan of Robert Englund. Ever since they did V, anybody, if you've never seen V, I mean, it's obviously outdated now, and it was a TV series, a miniseries. But when V came out, I was glued, man. I was hooked on it. I still have my original recordings from television. V was fucking great at the time. That's where I first learned of Robin Englund. And then when he came back as Freddy Krueger, and then the greatest. I mean, Andrew Dice Clay is my favorite comedian of all time. I mean, obviously he's rubbed off on me over the years, but to him to actually do a movie, Ford Fairlane in 1990, and Robin Englund is in the movie, and he's literally holding a drill. I was like, oh my God. Somebody read my mind. It's like my favorite comedian and my second favorite horror guy. If you've never seen it, you got to see it. I'm sure the fight scene is probably on YouTube. The fight scene with Andrew Dice Clay and Robin Englund when they're on the boat. Was it the Mighty Penis? Gilbert Gottfried's boat. Johnny Crunch. Oh, it's one of my favorite movies. I'm going to watch it tonight. I swear to God. I swear to God I'll never do another show. My wife tonight, she's probably hearing something, oh God, he's going to play that movie again. Yeah, when I sometimes just want a movie that I could just like reminisce and just have fun, that's the movie, man. And Spaceballs and Goodfellas, but. All right, Rocky Red, do I buy this idea that AEW could have their own brand split like WWE because of CM Punk? What's the timestamp? 41 minutes? Check out yesterday's show. Towards the end of the show, I talked about Dave Meltzer's recent comments. I love Dave Meltzer, but there's a problem there. There's a psychological problem there. A month ago, I feel awful. I'm sorry. I just want everybody to get along. And a month later, it's bizarro land. This, and I know where you're getting that from. His narrative that if things don't work out, that there'll be a split locker room with CM Punk being on Saturdays is honestly one of the dumbest, asinine, unprofessional, moronic things that anybody could say. I don't care who I insult. I will give you reason number one. Reason number one. Think about everybody who works for AEW right now that agrees with CM Punk. That if they lose their job with AEW, they ain't getting this fucking opportunity anywhere else. Some of them will never even be looked at by WWE. They might get looked at by GCW, but this is their opportunity. Do you think anybody who is that much lower on the food chain in AEW is going to turn around and say, I'm with Punk. I'll be on his split show. People are fucking afraid to speak up. That's why CM Punk doing what he did. I've said it since day one. He is the true voice of the voiceless. He spoke out on behalf of a lot of people in that company who are petrified to go against the elite, who are petrified. When you hear people say, oh, the locker room's not as bad as what people think. Sure, because people are fucking afraid to speak out. They don't want to go against Tony Khan's favorites. So the idea that people who are lower in the food chain are going to publicly stand with Punk and be on a split show, you think the elite are going to be like, I didn't know this person didn't like me. Oh, okay, give him a title. It's the dumbest thing that I ever heard in recent memory. That is the dumbest fucking thing that I've heard. I don't care who said it. A split roster, split locker room is the most asinine, stupidest, moronic, ridiculous idea that I have ever heard in recent memory. That is a farce. So hopefully I explained to you why that shit ain't happening. That's, I can't believe that he said it. You know, like maybe that's what Moxley was talking about, like people drunk podcast and drunk tweet. I mean, I didn't see Dave going like, well, you know, they'll probably do a split locker room. And, you know, I think they could actually, like, do a split locker room. Could you imagine they have two separate brands on a set? It's the dumbest thing I ever heard, man. You got to be kidding me. I love Dave. Somebody was like, if you don't like him, cancel your subscription. Yeah, he does. He, you know, everybody thinks that all Dave talks about is Meltzer and the Elite. He doesn't. Guy works his ass off. It's like this much, but it stands out. Dave, you're wrong on this one. You're wrong on this one. Seriously. Beyond wrong. All right. VJ. It's been said that Ricky Steamboat and Rey Mysterio would have never been believable heels. Who are a few of the modern-day wrestlers who would never be as believable as a heel? Not too many. I can't think of anybody right now. And I'm not saying that as a cop-out. Rey Mysterio, absolutely. We didn't have Filthy Animals, and he didn't have the mask. Everybody was like, a little punk. But they still loved the guy, but still. I mean, Rey got booed at some points, but the Filthy Animals were more cheered than booed anyway. You know, listen, in this day and age, it's very, very difficult. I think the opposite is better. I think the opposite is a better question. Like, I've said it many times before. Turning Alberto Del Rio face was one of the dumbest things that they could have ever done, especially at that point. Nobody believed it. Nobody bought into it. There's not. You can't, listen, there are some people like Sting, for example. You know, Sting, at this stage of the game, at his age, we don't want to see him as a heel. You know, but there were points, especially in TNA, where he kind of was playing a heel. But at the end of the day, it still was Sting, but you still bought into it, you know, when he was doing so. So, no, there's really nobody right now. You say Jeff Jarrett could never be a face. I criticize Jeff Jarrett a lot, but his age and still doing it, cleaning up his act. A lot of people know it. He does a great podcast. Jeff Jarrett abso-fucking-lutely would be cheered. Jeff Jarrett, when it's his time to retire, if he wants to retire as a babyface, he will absolutely be cheered. You know, the days of criticizing him for the TNA stuff are long gone. So this day and age is much harder because you don't have the amount of time invested where somebody's character is developed so polished on one side that you can never go to the dark side or the light side. So, Michael Gonzalez, who's more likely to become world champion first, Austin Theory or Gunther? I say Gunther. Don't get me wrong. I fucking love Gunther. I look around and I still have, like, a bunch of autographed cards of Gunther. I got Austin Theory stuff, memorabilia inside. Gunther, I could see being one of those heavyweight champions going into WrestleMania 40. An evil champion facing some other babyface? Absolutely. Austin Theory is a future heavyweight champion. You see it. You know it. You could tell. It's awesome to see how far Austin Theory has become in 1 year. But there is no rush to give him the heavyweight championship. And I don't want Austin Theory winning it on a fluke. I think when it's time for him to win it, I think people will feel, okay, he's earned it. It's the right time. Gunther, absolutely, I see. Before Austin Theory, by far. Lazy booking. Why did they put Mark Briscoe with Double J's goofy group? They're going to try to twist it into a storyline. You know, in the end, you know, Mark Briscoe, I think, will, you know, they'll end up splitting. I mean, you got to understand something. Jay Lethal and Mark Briscoe do like working with each other. And when they had the match, the tribute match to Jay Briscoe, they wanted to do some more together. So to me, I have no problem with it. I know if for people that may not follow AEW Rampage or Ring of Honor that closely, it seems like, where did this come from? That's really more of what it is. It's almost like when Matt Hardy was teaming up with Ethan Page early on. you know, it was kind of like, it is what it is. It's not advanced booking, but it is what it is. So, plus it's a storyline. I mean, outside of that, what you put it this way, of course you want tribute. You want to keep Jay Briscoe's memory alive. Absolutely. And ultimately, I think Mark Briscoe will become Ring of Honor heavyweight champion. But you don't want every storyline or every situation that Mark Briscoe's in has always got to be referenced Jay Briscoe. Gets to a point where you got to, like, realize, look, you know, we got to focus on Mark Briscoe. You know, it's just the way it is. Devin is asking who's going to be the next random WWE champion when they split the belts. I don't think there is going to be a random champion. I don't think there is. Everything right now, you know, we talked about it. It was very glaring with Elimination Chamber. Sneeze alert coming. I feel it coming. Sorry, everybody. This is like the seventh time in 27 years. I'm in a very dry, hot, dusty room right now. Dusty, if you will. So I muted it, so nobody heard it. No, as far as random champion, Elimination Chamber, when they put, you know, sped up Brock and Bobby Lashley, and that was supposed to be a Mania match, now you understand why they started going in a little bit of a different direction with Brock. But right now, everything is meaning. Everything is storyline, and storyline, the last random decision that they did that I think people would really question was taking the briefcase off of Austin Theory. And I thought it was the best thing they ever did. I said it the night they took the briefcase off of him. Greatest thing they did was remove that, you know, that attachment. Right now, WWE, everything has got to mean something. Everything is under a microscope. Everything. Listen, I don't want to talk about it yet. Let's wait a month or two. But it's going to get to a point where WWE is getting too polished with these storylines. You know, I'm fine with Cody Rhodes not winning yet, especially the discussions that we've had over the last 2 weeks especially. But gets to a point where you're like, okay, WWE, now you're trying to be a little bit too cinematic. Like, and I don't mean cinematic like Bray Wyatt versus John Cena WrestleMania cinematic. I don't mean Undertaker AJ Styles cinematic. I mean, okay, you get a little too cutesy with this stuff. It should, you know, like, all right, you want to tell story, you want to plan Easter eggs, you want to, you know, long-term booking, cinema, that's fine. But at the end of the day, it is pro wrestling and shouldn't be like a, you know, like a movie that deserves like 9 Emmys. You know, we just want good outcomes. So I don't think we're going to see a random champion. Look, you might see it with the U.S. title more than anything else. The U.S. title might be that title. You know, we can't use 24/7 anymore. The U.S. title might be the only title right now where I could see WWE possibly doing some hot potato. I think Austin Theory beating Seth Rollins, getting the title back, was a little bit surprising for people. Gruss, what's next for Karrion Kross? Shinsuke Nakamura. And I talked about it yesterday, once again. They have some great history together, and their styles are a lot more similar than you think. Shinsuke and Kross, it's not going to necessarily be Gunther versus Sheamus, but you're going to realize they actually click a lot better than you think. It sounds random, but they're going to work well together, and they're enjoying this one. So I want to take a wait and see approach, but Nakamura and Karrion Kross is going to be better than people think. It definitely comes off as random on the surface, but it's going to be better than people think. Trust me. And if it's not, I'll call it out. Kevin Milwaukee, was the fruit roll-up pinfall by Razor Ramon over Backlund at WrestleMania 9 Backlund's first and only TV loss since Arnold Skolin's towel? Wow, you're asking me to go from 1983 to like 1994 and think of Bob Backlund's history? All right, I actually can answer that. All right, that's a good challenge. I'll answer that. I'll bite. Bob Backlund left for the AWA shortly after his run in 1983. Bob Backlund went to AWA and was doing other things. Bob Backlund did not return to the WWF until the early 90s, 93-ish, around that time. I think Backlund losing... No, Backlund lost to Bret Hart on a WWF Superstars. I definitely brought it up on my history show. One of the greatest matches ever to take place on Superstars. I played the whole match in its entirety. If you go on my website, dontony.com, just type in Bob Backlund and look at the search results that come up. Or you could Google Backlund versus Bret Hart, WWF Superstars. And whatever that time frame is, whatever month that aired, go to my history show. And it is the group... arguably the greatest match to ever take place on Superstars. They wrestled for almost 30 minutes. This was right before Bret Hart turned heel. I mean, Bob Backlund turned heel. Right at the cusp of turning heel. In fact, he might have even turned heel at the end of the match. I don't remember exactly how it went down. But he lost on TV. So, but understand, he was gone for just about all of those years. So, yeah, on the surface, he was gone for most of that time, but I think his loss to Bret Hart happened first. Thoughts on Becky Lynch? Between her average heel turn and feud with Damage Control, she's underwhelmed since returning in 2021. She was gone for injury. She came back again. I look at it like this, honestly. Bianca Belair is the focus right now. Rhea Ripley is now the focus. Some people are going to have to take a back seat. Several years ago, Becky Lynch was the focus. Several years ago, Bayley was the focus. A couple of years ago, Charlotte Flair. A year ago, Charlotte Flair was the focus. At some point, you got to take a back seat. The problem is, when some of the bigger names take a back seat, people get paranoid on social media. Yeah, oh, look, Drew McIntyre went dark. Oh, Seth Rollins is unhappy. Oh, Becky Lynch, you're going to have peaks and valleys. It's just the way it is. If you start pushing Becky Lynch again, somebody's going to suffer as a result. Who's going to be the person that suffers? It's Bianca or Rhea. So, yeah, people don't accept that. It's, like I said, it's the mentality. Everything has got to be top-notch, epic, amazing, unbelievable. The outcomes have to be top-notch. Everything has got to be, awesome. It's got to make total sense. Everything's got to get everything's got to be a satisfaction. You know, if I have something, I sample something, everything's got to be perfect. It's got to be great. If it's mediocre, then I complain. So, Becky Lynch has to take a step back. They put her with the tag team to set up the storyline with Trish, obviously. And she got to have a little history with Lita and Trish, which is very important for Becky Lynch. Just like any of you who idolized someone when you were younger as a wrestling fan. Now you're in the business. You get the opportunity to work with that person, even though they passed their prime. So I have no issues with Becky Lynch at all. None. None. It's the same mentality I use with Indy Hartwell. I know it's a bad comparison, but again, when you see these people up until Stand and Deliver weekend, these petitions, 1,000, 2,000 likes, WWE, bring Indy Hartwell to the main roster. Oh, 2,000 likes, retweets, yes, heart emojis. And then what? And then what? To rekindle the relationship with Dexter Lumis, do some skits, then 6 months from now, and then what are you going to do? She's going to surpass all the women I said before and then some. What are you going to do with her? She's going to end up like Xia Li or Emma or Dana Brooke and others. And then people are going to be like, oh, my God, you got to release her. Or, whoa, look at Candice LeRae, with all due respect. Look at Meechan. I mean, do you feel like WWE has actually utilized them to their maximum? No. So, you know, people always are like, oh, push, 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 push. And then you realize somebody's got to get pulled back as a result. Right now, Becky Lynch is that person. So, all right, we're going to start wrapping this up. I'm trying to spread out the questions so everybody gets to ask something, as you see. What was my reaction when Eric Bischoff was announced as GM? How did I think he did? WWE GM, I guess you're talking about? We heard rumblings. I mean, the funny thing is, Kevin and I did an episode that night. His name is Eric Bischoff. It was surreal. There was rumblings earlier in the day that Eric Bischoff was backstage at Raw. The greatest thing about that night was Eric Bischoff was not revealed by Vince McMahon as being there. Do you remember that episode of Raw? I mean, I can't do his impersonation, but if you remember, there was a certain person with much darker skin than me that was doing an interview, and then all of a sudden he's looking outside of the camera. He's like, Booker T. Booker, Eric Bischoff. Tell me I didn't just see that. That was incredible. Thought I broke my glasses just now. I liked it. I liked it. It was believable. It got weird at times with Linda McMahon, Stephanie, with that dynamic with Eric Bischoff. I liked it. I liked it. I thought Eric Bischoff in WWE was surreal. When the night that Bischoff, Paul Heyman, and Vince were in the ring together, cutting promos, that was amazing. You know, again, you know, not everything during that time period was great, but some of it was. I prefer to remember the moments that were great. So, okay. I've talked about this before. I don't mind doing an episode with BC Amplified, but it's got to mean something. My Forbidden Door episodes, the idea is that I'm doing an episode with someone that you would not expect to be on. 99% of my audience really doesn't know who BC Amplified is. I do, and I know it would be a great conversation, but there's got to be a reason behind it, not just having a conversation. You know, I think the most recent Ultimate Forbidden Door was bringing Kevin back on, and, you know, we're having fun. Let's leave it like that for now. So, but it's been great, you know, doing some stuff with Kevin again. We're not going to force it, and we're not going to do it just to do it. It's going to mean something. But at the same time, though, you know, I've brought up a few times already, I'm shocked. Not surprised, but I am somewhat shocked at how many podcasters who are supposedly our friends never even, like, even contact is like, hey, that's cool that you two are doing something again. Or, hey, the OGs are back doing it. It's like 2005 all over again. And listen, you know, again, we're just doing our thing, have fun. We're not doing to fuck anybody over. That's different from 05. 05, we wanted to knock everybody out. Now we're just having fun. And honestly, I do a lot of stuff here. And I am trying to trim it down a little bit. If you notice, like, there's going to be more shows that are audio only. DTKC show will remain audio only. YouTube is not going to be my only footprint. It never was supposed to be that way. And again, we'll always have video stuff. I enjoy, you know, doing the animations and some of the stuff we do here. Just imagine if that was audio only, especially when I do certain things. Like, you can't, there's no replacement for that. So that'll always be here, but I'm trying to even it out a little bit. And as I get older, I got to be very, very careful with the time as well. Especially, you got to understand, there's a financial aspect with it also. I love doing all this show, but you know, you see other podcasters out there that are raking in $500, $1,000 in super chats, and they're doing this. No wonder why they do shows almost every day. You bank $200, $300, $400 a night in super chats. Yeah, it does help pay the bills. You come here and you get $17. You know, it's like, you know, you got to. And again, I'm not going to not do a show because revenue doesn't come in. My point is that, you know, you got to really be careful of how you use your time because, you know, this isn't 15 years ago where I could put everything on my credit card and just, paid for everything for 15 years. Never got a penny from anybody. So, you know, it's common sense. I mean, anybody that does shows knows exactly what I'm talking about. I just got an email from my hosting company from my website. I got to pay them $800. I'm like, yeah, no problem. I got to put it on my Amex. My Amex has a $13,000 balance on it right now. You know, I'm not complaining, but, you know, it gets to a point. That's why I said, you know, Kevin and I not doing live shows, you know, that's strategic now. Because, you know, I've noticed a few shows out there, like I'll do a show at like 6 o'clock on a Saturday night. And then all of a sudden, 6 o'clock on a Saturday night, suddenly this person's doing shows at that time. And yeah, I don't get that big of a live audience. But when you see half of your audience going, running to another person's show live and then checking me out on a replay, that's awesome. But I'm not staying up until 4 o'clock in the morning anymore, 3 o'clock in the morning. So people could check it out at their leisure on a Tuesday afternoon or a Wednesday afternoon or a Thursday afternoon. It's just, I still do it, but I got to be very, very smart about my time. That's why, you know, you might see a time difference coming up on a show here or there. That's why Kevin and I like doing it on Tuesday. Because when we record and we put it online, nobody could try to like strategically put their show. Hey, listen, when we did our, take note of this. When we did our WrestleMania review, we did it on Tuesday. We didn't do it Saturday after night one and Sunday after night two because we knew everybody and their mother was going to be live that weekend. Kevin and I said to each other, all right, let's do it on Tuesday so we could also talk about the Raw after Mania. We could think about this for a day or two, let it sink in a little bit. Let's understand what went down. And then by then, everybody blew their low with their WrestleMania recaps. Do you know there was at least six podcasters that, you know, have substantial numbers who did not release their audio versions of their WrestleMania recaps until Tuesday night? People that normally release it an hour or two after the live stream waited until Tuesday night. Don't tell me that everybody just decided to get lazy. When last year they put it Saturday and Sunday, and the year before they put Saturday and Sunday, I see how the game is being played. So, you know, it sucks that we have to bring this up once in a while, but at least you understand a little bit how competitive everybody is. And I respect it. I respect it. It's all good. There's no drama. You know, people got to do what they do. Listen, in this day and age, everybody's got a fucking podcast. I look at my wall now on Twitter, and I've muted a lot of people because I just don't want the negative. But I look at my wall. I got to share my wall one day with all of you. And you go down that wall, live streaming, live streaming, live streaming, playing games, talking wrestling, having a drink, drinking coffee, having this, playing games, talking this, let's do movies, let's talk sports. I was like, everybody's got one now, and that's cool. But now everybody's fighting to try to get the revenue. It's all good. It's all good. It's not what it was even 5 years ago. You know, when we started our Patreon, that's why when I plugged Patreon, people were like, wow, there's like thousands of episodes on there that have been Patreon exclusive, or at least 1,000. We started our Patreon, when Patreon first came out, there was only 5 wrestling channels on Patreon. 5. Now there's about 900. There's 900 Patreon, between wrestlers and podcasters. There's 900 wrestling channels on Patreon. When we started, there was 5. So, you know, times have changed. So, no, tons of room on YouTube, Sam. It's not true. It's not true. When you talk about ad revenue, like I said, you look at an episode you do and you get $1.19, $3.44 in ad revenue. You know, the only way that I could expand really on YouTube is if I get controversial or I start showing you my tits, or, you know what I mean? Like, I have to dress very, very skimpy, show off my red neck. You know, I got a red neck. Used to have neck fat. It's probably still a little there. That's a misnomer. That's a misnomer. Believe me. Oh, I put ads on my shows. I don't do them every 30 minutes. I don't sit and beg for money. I try to keep the ads to a minimum, but even if I quadruple the ads, oh, look, now I got $6 instead of $1.45. like, really, what is that going to do? So. All right, Tristan. Dream Survivor Series team, Hogan, Austin, The Rock, Macho Man, Goldberg. Yeah, those are the lead guys. On the opposite side, you could put Cena, Reigns, Orton. You could put Sting in his prime. You could go all WCW if you want. Listen, I don't object to any of those guys. Look, Hogan, yes. Hogan turned into, you know, recent years he's been better, but still, Hogan turned into, you know, a very disingenuous person in a lot of ways. But don't deny the fact, growing up, I was a Hulkamaniac. Hulk Hogan was my grandmother's favorite wrestler. My grandmother's who got me into wrestling. You know, growing up, Hogan was a very important part of my fandomhood, especially being in New York. You know, you got some exposure to NWA and Lucha Libre and other stuff, but, you know, then later on ECW, a little bit of AWA in 90, but Hogan was the guy. There's so many names you could put on the, seriously. You know, when you start making Survivor Series teams, then you're like, oh, what about Piper? And what about this part? There's so many. That's why I don't like doing Mount Rushmores. There's so many. It's so freaking hard. Even when people are like, who's your Mount Rushmore for ECW? Like, I got to put tag teams separately. Got to put them separately. You know, this is a good question. E-dubs, what happened to the episode we were going to do a cross? Well, now since Kevin and I are talking again, doing an episode with Cross, I think, is back on the table. Absolutely. You know, I have not talked to him about it yet. Again, it's got to be the right timing. It's got to be for a particular reason. It is kind of interesting that we were going to do this 3 freaking years ago. We were going to do this 3 years ago, more than 3 years ago. That's how fast time flies. Yeah, that's not out of the question. That could happen. That could happen. We'll see. We'll definitely see. Yeah, I'm talking about Karrion Kross, Killer Kross. As far as Bret Hart's recent comments, I did end up hearing all of it. He didn't just bash AEW. He also criticized WWE. And I agree. I agree what he said. Somebody climbs the rope and there's 10 people outside the ring and they all are there and they all come down looking like bowling pins. Yeah. If you, listen, my indie stuff was wrestle crap for the most time. But one thing that I always took pride on, and I had numerous wrestlers give me credit for it. I swear I will never do another show again if I'm making it up. I had wrestlers back then, and I have video proof of it, used to say to me, man, I love fucking diving onto you. I catch them like I'm catching a child. They're like, it's so common. Like, because I always made sure, two things, that if somebody was going to dive onto me, I was going to make sure that I was going to be in the right position to catch them, fall backwards, and since I'm not right by the guardrail, so I bang my head. And the second thing was, you know, you can look at the corner of your eye. You don't have to turn your head and look at the person. You ever see, I mean, the one that stares out to me more than anything is when Io Shirai, now Io Sky, did that dive. I looked at all the women that she dived onto, and all the women went like this, like looking at her. I mean, you're supposed to like act like you're, you know, you're doing something, this, this, and that. And then in the corner of your eye, you see the person setting up. And then when the person dives off, you're like, and you're like, that's what it is. If you, I don't have it queued up here, but maybe next Sunday, I'll show you an example. I'll show you one where this wrestler sabotaged Azrael. A lot of you know Azrael, legendary, you know, Northeast wrestler. Now, Azrael used to say that too. He jumped off the top rope and dove onto me. And if you look, he's over here and I'm over here and I'm helping somebody up. And in the corner of my eye, I see him climbing the top rope and I'm helping a person up and I'm looking like this. And as soon as he jumped off, I turned around and I went like this. And he landed right on me. But that's little things that, and let me explain something. I'm not comparing me to Io Shirai. My point is this. When you're in the big time and your value is extreme, you know, they're very important wrestlers in WWE, people who are being dived on are going to be a little bit extra cautious. You know, like me, I knew that my timing, that I can do it. Not everybody's timing is that quick. And I'm not saying that my time was better than others, but, you know, when they just turn around and then they land, I know what's happening. But for others, you might have to be a little extra careful, because that could be the difference of somebody landing the wrong way. And believe me, I tell you, when you fall down and somebody that's like 200 pounds lands on you, you know, there is an art form to that. You got to be careful. But I don't blame Bret Hart for having those views. The thing that Bret Hart gets wrong is for every moment that somebody dives onto people and they fall like bowling pins, there's moments that it's beautiful, that there is a lot of old school still there. Wrestling is going to be what it is in 2023. Jim Cornette could complain. Bret Hart could complain. Other people could complain. We're not going to have a promotion, Retro Championship Wrestling. I'm waiting for it. How come nobody out there, you know what? People want the 80s and the 90s style of pro wrestling. We're going to give it to you with a contemporary twist. Coming soon, Retro Championship Wrestling. Old School Championship Wrestling. OSCU, OSCU, OSCU. Can't say SCU, but people understand 2023 wrestling is different. But to make it seem like everything, I think Bret Hart is a little bit misguided, to be honest with you. I watched John Morrison's boxing match this morning. That was cool, man. That was cool. The best part about it, and I did save the video I'm going to share with everybody tomorrow on Monday's show. When he came out, when he was introduced for his boxing match, he came out. He had Karrion Kross with him, Scarlett, Taya Valkyrie, L.A. Knight. I don't remember who else was with him, but Hacksaw Jim Duggan. It was so fucking funny because you're looking like, oh, shit, look who it is, look who it is. And then at the end, oh, like, oh, man, that was great. That was such a cool moment. And he won his match. And he won his match. That was cool. So I can't show the match tomorrow, but I'll show you the clip. Somebody caught it on their iPhone, and they were sitting ringside, and they caught them all coming out. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. And then you see Hacksaw at the end, and I'm like, oh, that's great. That was great. Morrison looked good, man. Morrison looked good. It didn't feel like, you know, like somebody was doing a dive or anything like that. So, all right, 3 minutes and we're out of here. Mike is asking thoughts on Diamond Dallas Page calling Roman Reigns the greatest of all time. It's a matter of opinion. Didn't Jake the Snake Roberts call Kenny Omega better than Roman Reigns? It's all about perception and maybe a little bit of kissing ass. Look, I think, why do my glasses fit? Remember I said before I thought I broke my glasses? I don't know, for some reason they feel weird. Is Roman Reigns the greatest of this generation? You know, it's so hard to say. You know why? And I want everybody to remember this. You may not think it's a big deal, but it really is. Roman Reigns got an advantage that no other wrestler did. And that was COVID. And that was empty arenas. And that was Thunderdome. Believe me. I enjoyed Thunderdome because I was part of it like 11 times. But Roman Reigns got an advantage that no other wrestlers have had. He got an extended period of time that he didn't have to worry about the crowd going what on him, shitting on him, voicing absolute displeasure in the crowd. You know, just they controlled the reaction. Because it was an empty arena, they could go cinematic with Jey Uso and Roman Reigns. There was a lot of things and a lot of time that they got an advantage to build Roman Reigns in a way that no other wrestler has been able to do in the past. You know, he had empty arenas for a long time to basically have WWE dictate where it was going to go. And I'm not taking it away from Roman Reigns. But if we never had COVID, if we never had Thunderdome, if we never had empty arenas for that long, would Roman Reigns have been able to develop as he did? I don't think so. If that was the case, then why did it only start to really gel after we had the empty arenas? He had a handicap. He had an advantage that no one else did. And that's just the facts. But, a big but, Roman Reigns, since we have returned to live crowds, has backed it up. He got an advantage to get to the promised land. Now he has maintained it. So is he one of the greatest of this generation? Yeah, I think so. Is he the greatest of this generation? I don't know about that. It's about perception, and I would not put Roman Reigns number one, in my opinion. I don't know who you put number one. And plus, we got to figure out a time frame here. We're talking about 10 years. We're talking about 20 years. You know, all time. All time? I don't know about all time. You know, you're talking a long time. So, all right, we got a super shout-out alert. We got a super shout-out alert from Kevin Milwaukee. Remember that pop when Mr. Perfect returned in 2002? I'll give you one that comes to mind right away. Then he made it all the way to the final three, even outlasting Steve Austin. Who would have thought that at the time, seriously? The nostalgic pops are some of my favorite in history. The three that stand out to me is Mr. Perfect, Kevin Nash in the Rumble, and D'Lo Brown. Yes, D'Lo Brown was a fan of the Minority Report. It's on record. I've played that promo 1,000 times to death. Let me tell you something. I will always be forever grateful. You know, those guys taking my shows to Japan and hearing, like, all the American wrestlers, Tenzai and others, you know, all checking out our shows in Japan while they're out. I mean, that is one of the most beautiful compliments that I've ever gotten, and I appreciate that to this day. With that said, even if D'Lo Brown never heard a second of what we did, I'd still just say the same thing. When he came back, that pop when he first came back was awesome. A week later, it was depressing because you realized after the nostalgic pop, WWE did not know what to do with him. The time had gone by. Mr. Perfect, you know, people need to understand, 2002 Royal Rumble was only a year after WCW went out of business. It's not like Mr. Perfect disappeared for 10 years and came back. Kurt Hennig was around. Four Horsemen, you know, do I need to say it anymore? My spot? You know, it wasn't that long before this Royal Rumble, but it was an awesome nostalgic moment. Unfortunately, it did not last as long as it should. And then we had the unfortunate tragedy, you know, with Kurt Hennig passing away. Kurt Hennig will always be one of my all-time favorites. I still wish with his son, Curtis Axel, I still wish they would have done Mr. Imperfect. That was a storyline that I pitched on this show when his son first debuted in WWE. I said, they need to do Mr. Imperfect. That he wants to do everything his father did. He tries to shoot a hoop. He gets an air ball. He wants a ball. He hits a gutter ball. He strikes out. He gets into a boxing match, gets knocked out in the first couple of seconds. Everything he did, Mr. Imperfect. But he was trying. He was trying. He was trying. And then ultimately he gets on top and everybody would have fell in love with him. We got that a little bit differently later on with the Kurt Hawkins. He was like 0-800, you know, but they never did those segments. I wanted to hear dun, 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 like that. You know, scratching a record. Just picture Curtis Axel with the basketball, and you hear dun, 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 and he throws the basketball up, and it's in slow motion, and it's like that famous GIF file online where somebody shot the air ball at an NBA game. There's a famous one where it's in slow motion, and the basketball just poof, they never did it. Never did it. I mean, that one I appreciate. My favorite one of all time is when I said that Daniel Bryan needs facial hair. And they first brought him back after being fired. I said, something's missing with Daniel Bryan. My co-host, Kevin Castle, was like, what do you think he's missing? I said, I think he's missing facial hair. I think he just looks too, you know, milquetoast, too indie. I think if he grows his hair, grows a beard, gets a little bit of an attitude change, I think it could work. DT, I don't know. Nobody thought. I just was talking wild shit at the time. Hey, what about, hey, I thought Roman Reigns was going to get the John Cena push. What are you talking about? Roman Reigns and John Cena don't even wrestle the same. That's what everybody was saying to me. I always thought Roman Reigns was the heir apparent for John Cena with the kids and the role model and stuff. Obviously, it didn't work out the way they thought it was, but it's pretty cool to look back on that stuff. But Mr. Perfect's return was great because it showed me that WWE didn't forget about him, but unfortunately, that run did not last, and that's a shame. So, sucks. Sucks. Richard with a 5-spot. DT, I just wanted you to know that I'm a huge fan of the show. Been listening since 13, starting with TV tracks. Keep it up, my guy. I will keep it up. I will keep it up. Unless something, you know, happens to me medically, or if I start drinking and podcasting, I'm not going nowhere. I just have to manage my time. You know, especially, you know, I got somebody now, you know, owns half of this equipment. And she owns half of this stuff. So, hey, next week, there'll only be one jar. But, I ain't going nowhere. And having Kev back, you know, I know it was in some people's minds long overdue. But understand it happened for the right reasons. You know, it didn't happen for, you know, like some assholes were like, oh, they both realize that they suck unless they are doing it. No, that's not the case at all. But, I appreciate it, and I miss TV tracks. I, you know, it just goes to show you how the revenue has changed on YouTube as well. It blew me away. Somebody showed me a link, and I was going to respond to let everybody know, but then I realized that that same Facebook page has a thread bashing the shit out of me, and the people that run the page, they left it up and celebrated it and, you know, never even told anyone, hey, you know, let's be a little respectful here. A lot of people don't know why TV Tracks left. And I got the answer firsthand. When YouTube had that ad Armageddon, whatever it was, Adpocalypse, that's what it was. And they took away all the ad revenue from the wrestling shows. Wrestling promotions went out of business. Podcasters went out of business. TV Tracks went out of business. TV Tracks every week listen to 30, 40, 50 hours of wrestling shows and would take clips and post them online. And he asked me early on, hey, DT, can I post clips of your shows? I'm like, absolutely. Kev was fine with it as well. And he made tons of ad revenue off of it. When Adpocalypse happened on YouTube, he shut it down because who in their right mind is going to spend 60, 70 hours a week between listening to shows, editing it, titling it to make, what, $45? I mean, the guy was making 10, 15 times the amount with this stuff. And the greatest thing about it was, you know, we never asked him for a dime, but he was always looking out. He was always looking out for my show, for Jason Solomon's show, for a few others out there. But soon as that Adpocalypse went down, he sent me a message. He sent me an email. And he said, DT, look, I'm going to take a little time off. And I said, look, thank you. I said, I know how hard you worked on that channel. I appreciate it. I knew he was never coming back. Because once they cut that revenue, and even though ads returned, it's like one-tenth of what it used to be. I should have started YouTube 10 years ago. Would have been much different compared to now. But now, if you think you're going to go on YouTube, try and thinking you're going to make bank, or you better have something really unique about yourself, because it ain't happening. It ain't happening. I mean, honestly, you know, I don't want to reveal how much is made on this channel, but, you know, it's nowhere near what people think. It is very, very small. Especially, again, when you think about Patreon. Our Patreon page right now is one-tenth the size of what it used to be because everybody and their mother has a Patreon now. So you got to do a little here, you got to do a little here, you got to do a little here, but it's not going to be the replacement of it all. If you focus on only one place, either you're doing it for free and doing it for the love, or you ain't doing it at all. But TV Tracks, I hope he's doing well. I've always shouted him out. Hey, man, email me. I've emailed him once in a while. I still got his email address. I'm like, hey, bro, how you doing? How's everything? Yo, bro, don't feel guilty. You know, I understand why you left. You know, just tell me you're all right. Never heard from him ever again. Never. Don't know what happened to him. Don't know what happened to him. So, but I'll always be very appreciative and grateful for what he did. He made a lot of money. You know, listen, he made thousands a week. Thousands a week? At least, I would say at least $1,000 a week. Yeah, I'd say at least $1,000 a week. Close to it. You know, maybe $700 to $1,000 a week at his peak. It's a lot of money, especially just on ad revenue. So I hope he's doing well. But yeah, that social media page, nobody knows why he left. And, you know, I was going to post the answer so everybody knows, but I'm like, you know, why? So half the people that, you know, wish me death, you know, are going to be like, oh, thanks for the update. Nah, he was done. He was done. That next week when I went on my show and I said, shout out to TV Tracks. Got two words for you. Thank you. I knew he was done. Well, it was easy. It was easy. Adpocalypse killed him. Do I see Kevin and Owens and Sami Zayn losing the tag titles in Saudi Arabia because they won't go to Saudi Arabia? No, no. WWE is never, ever, ever going to give this public perception of punishment for not going to Saudi Arabia. It's not going to happen. WWE is fully aware that some wrestlers do not want to compete in Saudi Arabia for obvious reasons. They will never be publicly penalized for it. Listen, there's been a couple of times over the years that we felt Kevin Owens got de-pushed right after Saudi Arabia because he didn't go. I mean, I don't remember specifically the circumstances, but I remember us talking about it like, hey, you may find it interesting, like last month or two, like Kevin Owens is like, they really like have taken a focus off of him. They're not gonna even dare give the perception that they lose the tag titles right before Saudi or right after Saudi. They're not gonna put that thought in people's heads. No, 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 no. All right. I'm gonna get out of here. So I wanna thank everybody for joining me tonight. It was fun as always. I thank you for giving me tremendous subjects to talk about tonight. Remember, on Sundays, you guys set the tone of whatever is discussed. When I type the synopsis later tonight and everybody else sees it, you know, they will realize like, oh, interesting topics. Well, you are the ones that chose them. So I thank you for that. So if you're around Monday night, I will be here at 11:05 to recap Raw. And if you're part of our Patreon, I will be on Patreon Tuesday for your normal Patreon episode. Kev did an episode, I think, of KNT this past Thursday. That's playing on Patreon right now. And yesterday's show, the ad-free, is up. So, and then Tuesday, we got the history show coming up again. And, you know, I'll let everybody know when the next DTKC will be up. Like I said, my gut feeling is next Tuesday we'll do a draft preview. And it'll be a lot more than just a preview because I know a lot of people are not excited about the draft, but we will try to make it as interesting as possible. So if you enjoyed the show, you know what to do. If you know anyone else out there you think might like the channel, let them know about it. Spread the word. Let them know. And I thank you, as always, for the support. Much love. Much appreciated. And I will catch you all again soon. Be well. Stay safe.
It's now time for...
No, it's not time for that. What the hell? Did I just like... Oh, no, I didn't. See, people... Yeah, that was my mistake. Now I can officially say goodnight.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who've claimed they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.